My mind goes backwards in time somehow when I hear the sounds of echo. To the Dr. Fred Bell Health Science and Energy Show. And that, of course, is an echo from my album, The Fellowship, that I did a number of years ago, but still seems to be playing around the world. Strangely enough, I was just talking to Donald, the producer here, the other day, and I happened to remember that that was my first album in 1987, recorded on an 8-track. Later on, it's been put on CD now, but... I played that all over Europe in a concert, that album, and it's a 90-minute long album, and so that makes perfect for a concert. And it made the Cannes Film Festival in 88 and got into two films, and it won some awards, and that was pretty good for a scratch-engineered album. And of course, the Pleiadian ships are pretty unique on there, so I imagine people like that, and I know I like it, and most people that listen to it, and you can order that, by the way, through our website. Good album. And that song, when I played it in Germany, I wrote that song. I love to play it. I play it live a lot. It's an easy song to play. It doesn't require a lot of equipment. And it was really strange because when I was at the University of Hamburg, where I actually played my first concert, which was a disaster because the sound equipment wasn't right. I didn't have monitors on the stage. I couldn't hear what I was playing. One guy came up at the end of the show and said, "Thanks for the ride, man." I was embarrassed because I couldn't hear what I was playing. But anyway, that was about 1929 in Germany. A musician over there had made a song very similar to that, and it was a world-class hit in Germany in 1930. Almost the same thing. I don't know the name of it. I'll have to research it for you if you're interested. Email me. And... strangely enough, when they heard the album, back on the airwaves it went in 1989. It was on again with me, this time my version of my own original song, I thought, but I guess it wasn't original, but anyway, it doesn't matter. And it was on the airwaves again. So that's all. That's quite an interesting song. It's called Echo. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying the other two shows. This is show number 3. We're going to be doing, this is recorded obviously a day before. It's going to play, so hopefully a lot of you heard the Art Bell Show on Saturday night, August 13, 2005. If not, it's archived. And today we're going to continue on with the basic introduction of sannyasi. I did get a couple of emails from people, and they did ask me if I was still in contact with the Pleiadians. And the answer is no, not anymore. It's ended in 1989. And it was quite interesting. I'll get into that ending of it later, but... after spending 20 years with somebody, it was not exactly a happy ending from my standpoint. I was a little bit disappointed, like we all are at the end of a long relationship with someone that we really care about, might have even known in past lives. But anyway, last week we talked about the pyramids and the beginning of Pyridine, and so we'll continue on with that and in the contacts that I had with sannyasi. And we talked a little bit about consciousness. And what it is, it's a feeling. That's what it is. 7 feelings in the body, 7 endocrine glands, 7 sets of hormones, and blah, blah, blah. That's how it all goes. A lot of people like to make it levels of draw levels like bookshelves and put it that way, but consciousness is not that at all. It's within itself. It's seven levels within itself. It's its own inner nature, and it's just subdivides into whatever is predominant for you at that moment is what consciousness is, whether it's love, sex, compassion, any feeling that you have, love, energy, thought, expression, are all consciousness, all the same thing, all intertwined within itself. This receptor was interesting. There's a book called The Promise. I've mentioned it before. It'll be back out in print. Hold your breath. But it will come. It was written by Brad Steiger. It's in two languages that I know of, German and Japanese. It's been a bestseller in Japan for, 10 years now, a long time since it came out. Toku Publishing Company, by the way. Toku. I think it's spelled T-O-U-K-U, I believe, publishing here in Tokyo. Has it. And story of the nuclear receptor, we're going to make a movie out of it eventually. I think that's make a good screenplay. Brad and I have talked about it. And the story of how the receptor came to me. The only thing is it's been glamorized about 25% to be, you know, a book, a novelized book. And the part of it, the beginning, it starts out like Raiders of the Lost Ark. And the part where it starts out is my dad being killed by the Third Reich, when in fact it was me being killed by Reinhard Heydrich. And evidently when I was up in Tibet working for the chicken farmer, Himmler, I had discovered some artifacts, and the receptor had to do with that. But also there's an interesting connection. It's in the Temple of Dendora, which is in Egypt along the Nile River. The temple of that has the constellation of the Pleiades depicted upon it. And there are some secret chambers and passageways in that temple that maybe we're talking about doing a television series. Maybe we'll go over there and uncover those. I also know that when I go back to Egypt again with my synthesizers, that there are special kinds of sounds that I use in those D-50s, and they're brought off the Pleiadian ships. And I know that for a fact, I've been told by Sannyasi when I finally get over there, I thought I'd been over there by now, but obviously it hasn't happened yet, that when I start playing these sounds, and on those of you that go to the website, by the way, you'll see the new pictures that are up there. Some of the pictures are about me playing energy into the Haleakala crater. And what I do is I send the sound down there and then bring it, and it reflects back the Pleiadian sound. I record it 20 decibels underneath the under the main tracks of when I'm doing my music work. We can do that anywhere. We can do that over in Indian burial grounds. We can do it over Sacred Mountain. We can do that technique anywhere. It's a Pleiadian technique of sending out a digital sound and then recovering analog components and then reintroducing it to the mix. So with that technology, we'll go to Egypt, and from what I'm told, when I play in certain sacred areas, that it will cause by sound doors and chambers to be unlocked and doors and, you know, things to be exposed that are heretofore not exposed yet. And the reason that this is taking so long is the world in consciousness is not ready yet. It's interesting because when I started my company Pyridyne, my partner Jim was married to an Egyptian princess by birth, and her parents actually own the land that the Great Pyramid is sitting on right now as we speak. That land is owned by a private family, although the government has control of it. And my friend Zami is the curator of the Great Pyramid. Back when he was a young pup and I was a young pup, we toured together around the United States. He wasn't the curator of the Great Pyramid at the time, but he is now. Zawi, I guess his name is now. He used to walk around here barefoot. He's quite a guy, but now he's high up in the government of Egypt. But anyway, getting into the nuclear receptor a little bit, it's a device that came here from the Pleiades. I had two copies originally, and Sannyasi took them back. And we were able to coin that or make the design of the receptor into a mold, which costs thousands and thousands of dollars. Because it has pyramids at 52-degree angles sitting on the surface of a dish that's curved, and because the arrangement being in the Fibonacci series, it was a computer nightmare on a CAD program to design this stuff. But we finally did it because the terrestrial science over here capabilities are barely in sync with the Pleiadian technology. Our highest science attributes barely touches their lowest junk in science. So these are the kinds of problems that I'm always faced with when she gives me something that's a little bit far out. The projector, which we won't get into today, but the projector, which is Andromedan technology, was a nightmare to produce We barely able, it took 10 extra years to produce it and to get it out on the street. So just so you have an idea how long that, and that's a long time, I thought. So anyway, we've gone through quite a bit to bring this stuff to you, and it's cost literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce this technology. People wonder why some of our products are expensive. Well, we got to recapture our engineering costs, to say the least. And as I said earlier, when you take matter and you interfere with space and time, as we did in the receptor, it creates an event. That's why there's the red blood cell is shaped like it is in the body. It does what it does. You know, it brings out oxygen to the cells and takes back carbon dioxide to the lungs so it can be exposed to the plant kingdom so that the plant kingdom can reconvert it to oxygen. It's all done by shape energy. Chlorophyll, for example, which looks like a red blood cell, which is the heart of the sap in a tree or the heart of the sap in a plant, is a three-sided pyramid. The octahedron, which we have in the carbon atom, and the hemoglobin, the red blood cell, which is four of two alpha, two beta chains, is four-sided, like a pyramid with 52-degree angles. The chlorophyll atom is three-sided, and it's a little bit different. It forms the lifeblood of plants. It's correspondent of hemoglobin in humans. And interesting enough, in the grays have in their blood system a chlorophyll type of atom structure, atomic structure. And Semyasi explained that to me, is that the grays are, you know, if you took an insect and gave it a million years or a billion years of evolution, you end up with something like a gray. And that's pretty much what happened over at Theta Reticuli 3. So, very interesting. While we're on the subject of this stuff, too, also look at the blog and service website, and you'll see some of the papers that I've released that were talking about my working with classified documents at the Skunk Works, some of the other places I've worked. Some of my DOD, Department of Defense documents are up there now. I didn't know how far into that to post this stuff, but I wanted you to be aware that I'm not really kidding here when I say I've done these things, and documentation, I think, is important. So we've been doing a little bit of that and threw up some nice pictures for you to look at there. On the radars that I work with, the one that brought down the crashes of Roswell, Aztec, and the Laredo, that radar is up there, the ANFPS 35 now. The Saturn, the second stage that I worked on at the Wernher von Braun Seal Beach when I was assigned to NASA by North American Aviation, now Rockwell, is on there. And just before that, just after that picture was taken, and it's noted on the website, we had a visitation from an alien, I guess the Pleiadians. I wasn't a contactee then, but it was a round disc type ship. And 450 people, some in the picture on the website, actually saw the ship. Of course, that was hushed up like it always is. Anyway, getting back to the receptor, it kind of looks like a satellite dish for those of you that can't go on the computer and see it. And what it does is it gathers energy. It collects energy that's already present around the body. And this energy is an etheric type force. It's a precursing energy. And what it does is it's transmuted through a small hole in the center into the human aura, the aura frequency of the body. And it works radionically and homeopathically. And what that means is this. The science of homeopathy started, really made popular by Samuel Hahnemann back in the two centuries back, was the science of light cures light, meaning that if you're under the influence of a poison, i.e. a gram-negative or positive bacteria that's alien to the body or a virus, if you use a sample of that and put it into the body, when the body's in a healthy condition, the immune system can develop some immunity to it. So with that, you have an allopathic, the way vaccines work, and in homeopathic, you have the way it's combated. It combats the poison itself, but unfortunately, in homeopathy, it comes a little late. It usually cures like after you're sick. So there's a good side to the allopathic side, and there's a good side to the homeopathic side, and the two of them split back in the 1800s, the two sciences split. And, of course, the allopathy got out of control as soon as drug companies, you know, one of the first things they did is legislate. And some of the Taft-Hartley-Harrison narcotic acts, they took out our ability to grow hemp, which would, of course, be our fuel, as I've talked about many times. they took away that ability, and they also introduced drugs and made a lot of things illegal that were formerly legal in the naturopathic practices that this country did see at the turn of the century. And before that, there was a lot of naturopathic stuff going on and homeopathic stuff going on. But as the drug cartels grew, they began to push this stuff further and further away up until about the late 1940s when this stuff started to resurface. And, you know, previous to that, I'm sure you remember the snake oils and all the other things that were out there. So what happens in homeopathic medicine is that in like cures like, they have X's. In other words, this is 10X, this is 20X, this is 100X, this is 1000X. And so let's say I had a gallon of purified water, or actually a quart of purified water, and I put, say, 1 gram, hypothetical, of a poison into that that was good for curing arthritis, an arthritis remedy. Then when I wanted to make it this is now a 1X solution, let's say 1 quart of water and 1 gram of substance, probably something like yucca root. You know, yucca is very good for fighting arthritis. So anyway, let's say I want to make it 100 times powerful. Well, I wouldn't add in 10 more grams. What I would add in, or 100 more grams, is more water. I would increase the water. I would go from a quart to a gallon of water. Now I would have 100 times solution. And then if I wanted to make it 1,000 times more potent, I wouldn't add anything to my gram of yucca. I would just now add another 10 gallons of water, so, and use it that way. So we're diluting it, because what happens is it puts what I call a load of expectation out on the cell at the electrical precursing level, and it acts like an expectorant, so it causes the cell to work a little bit harder. However, your body needs to have some familiarity with homeopathic medicine before you start getting these different X's to really work the way they can. So to start out with, we probably start with a lower dosage, because a lower dosage, a smaller X number, will work quicker in the body, because it does want to see mass. It can't see the subtlety of the dilution until you get further into the cure. So you know how that works. Works backwards, in other words. Same thing with a nuclear receptor. You know, your aura is created at the base of the brain, and then across the synapses, as a hormone arrives, leaves a neuron and crosses the synapse in the brain, it fires off electrically. An electrical impulse is based on the amount of phosphorus in your body, and then that shoots an electrical field up into the central nervous system, and then that goes down through the spine. So, and these firings of these different synapses are modulated by the hormonal system. So if you're listening to very harmonious music, you've got a modulation in there. It's creating an euphoric feeling, hopefully, in the body. If you're listening to some hard music you don't like, it's probably creating a distortion and you're not feeling comfortable. Either way, you got a feeling. The electricity then moves down through the 72,000 major wires called nadis in the spine. It's amplified. Each wire within each wire is a thing called a node of Renier. And it has a little sodium-potassium pump, so it's constantly amplifying. The analogy to that would be, a hydroelectric power station and a bunch of wires coming out of it through transformers to raise the voltage and lower the current so that you can transmit it higher. Higher voltage transmits with less line loss across a great distance. And, of course, line loss is compensated for by different amplifying stations in a power situation, or grids, in these grids. And in the body, this line loss between the wiring loss between your brain and your feet is amplified by nodes of Renier. So one of the first things that happens under stress is these nodes of Renier start disconnecting. So therefore, theoretically, the continuity of your nervous system is interrupted, which then causes a backing up. Now, in a grid situation, electricity, of course, causes a lot of what we call brownouts. In the human body, in an extreme situation, we call it a blackout. The basic is loss of consciousness or loss of power to the end user, the delivery point. The delivery point in the body being all the organs and nerves and sensitive feelings that the body has, and fingers and toes and all of those sorts of things, and the liver and all the functions of the kidneys and the functions of the heartbeat. All those things can go away in a hurry if the nodes of Renier fail. So one of the things that the nuclear receptor does is it transmits a frequency, a vibratory frequency, out to these nodes of Rainier, causing him to stay constantly in synchronization. In other words, it sort of bypasses the wire to provide energy for synchronization by going right through the air, the airwaves, basically, of the body. There's other pathways in the body called etheric pathways that haven't been discovered by modern science, other than the fact that they're starting to recognizing them through the quark theories and understanding quarks. And in the hydrogen atom, for example, there's 9 quarks. And these 9 quarks produce a consciousness-raising effect, which science is seeing not only in the hydrogen atom in our body, because we're oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon, but it's also seeing that in science, hardcore science itself, in particle physics. So there is a parallel similarity there. On the bridge of the nuclear receptor, if you look at this device, you'll see a stone, a gemstone. It'll be one of 7 different colors, and we muscle test you for whichever color that you're weakest in, because that's your consciousness. If you remember last week's discussion, we talked about colors and consciousness and gemstones and vitamins and correspondences, and I think in my book, Rays of Truth, there's a page, I forget which one, that has this printed, and Death of Ignorance also has this page printed, showing the correspondences between sound, light, and color in the central nervous system of the body and the body functions and organs. So when we look at the bridge with a stone on it, let's say there's a green stone there. Well, we would use a green stone as a filter for the energy that's collected in the grid network of the dish itself. And what we would do with that is we would look at green. Green, of course, would be something that the thyroid gland would need. So if a person had a weak thyroid, we would use an emerald receptor for that person to help balance the energy in the thyroid, so then the energy could then help balance out the body. And this, of course, has to do with weight control and also activity of constant thoughts. So if you don't have a good activity of constant thoughts, the thyroid gland is often out of whack. Now, the other thing is the parathyroid, and that, of course, produces calcium. So, and if you don't have that working properly, you're not going to have calcium, and if you're going to have calcium not working properly, then you're going to have a shortage of calcium in the body, which is going to cause heart conditions because the body uses calcium. And it's number one use for it once you stop growing. The bones are no longer growing, but just maintaining. It's the heart, because calcium produces an enzyme called actin, which is important for the heart to beat. And if actin isn't present, the heart isn't beating properly. There's an electrical field that goes out of whack, and that's called the Bohr field, or the B-O-H-R effect in the body. And so when you put the calcium or the energy back in, the Bohr effect is better and the heart beats in a normal rhythm that it's supposed to. Sometimes when we're testing, though, we'll notice there's a problem with someone's heart, and then we'll go into the sapphire. And the sapphire is a blue stone, kind of a bluish stone, and it correlates more to the heart in the body than the emerald. But it's always, you have to muscle test because it can be tricky. And sometimes when we have people that are overweight and they want to do something about that, some kind of a curbing is necessary for that problem, that addiction to their whatever they're doing to cause the weight to be there, whether it be overeating or just a low metabolic rate. Could be either one. Sometimes we have to go up into the pituitary gland. And when we get up in the pituitary gland, what we see there is pink. And that, of course, usually is a ruby. We use a ruby, so we would be using a ruby for that. But that's a tricky area between the heart and the thyroid. So someone that's very qualified needs to be testing to make sure of those 3 stones, which is the one that is needed at that point. It doesn't mean that 2 or 3 of them aren't going to be needed. Because let's say the thyroid is a problem, and you remember that our body is reproducing cells at rate of 90 million per second, 50 to 9 million per second. And, of course, if you have the receptor on the body, the frequency of the reproduction, the integrity, I should say, of the reproductive cycle is going to increase. And so therefore, the thyroid gland is going to start to become more balanced and wholesome because it's being directed by electrical precursing energies from the receptor to produce the proper amounts of electricity, what we call biases or biasing, on all of the cells. And if the cells are not biased correctly, then liver cells can't get mixed with brain cells, and the cell structure, the cell separating faculties of the body are incorrect. And so you get a less than necessary cell reproduction. So these are all the kinds of things that we need to take into consideration when we're muscle testing you for the correct stone. Because after a while, after 90 days, the red blood cell is definitely going to be affected. And if the red blood cell is definitely going to be affected, then the entire body is going to be affected. Then after a longer period of time, a number of years in some cases, and less than that in the case of the liver, an entire organ is going to be reproduced. And let's say that there was a problem with the thyroid. It's now been reproduced over, say, a 18-month period. You now have basically a new thyroid. So we muscle test, and we no longer need an emerald in the receptor. Now we've got to change it and get something else, possibly a... maybe now we need to go look at the pituitary. Pituitary might now have a high enough output of oxytocin and vasopressin and a few of the other neurohormones that are necessary to do other functions in the body to correlate to weight loss or heart conditions. So therefore, we need to put in something like a pink topaz or a ruby or whatever we decide the stone is for the filter. We're talking about a filter here now, how pretty it is on the receptor. When we do this, we use natural and synthetic stones. Synthetic stones are usually good to start with, but once the body and the person becomes familiar with the feeling changes they experience while wearing the receptor, they'll oftentimes then go into naturals, because the natural is a much finer way of fine-tuning the different body frequencies that you're working with. Synthetic is the same material as a natural stone, but it's laboratory grown. Versus, so it's not glass, it's an actual, like for example, emerald is chromium oxide, not glass, not green glass. It's the real thing, but it's just made in a laboratory. Even diamonds are made in a laboratory now, and you can't hardly tell them. The only way you can tell them from a natural is they're flawless. Anytime you find a diamond is flawless, it usually comes from the laboratory, because there's always something going on in a diamond. Even VBS 1G and the best graded diamonds there are, still have flaws in them somewhere. And a trained eye, through a trained microscope or ocular, can figure out what the problem is or what the distortion is and classify it accordingly. Also, on the dirt surface of the nuclear receptor, we put pyramids right side up and pyramids upside down. If you take a normal pyramid, and this is in the early chapters of my book, and place it on someone's head, and push down on them, they'll test a little bit stronger than they normally do. However, if you take a normal pyramid and you place it upside down on a person's head and do muscle testing, like, for example, have them extend their arm straight out, try to maintain that, and you push their arm down, but they're pushing back because you want to have your arm extended directly in front of you, and you don't want anybody to push it down. That's muscle testing. So you resist. You hold your arm steady. And finally, it will collapse because the person has leverage on you, because your arm is extended and your hand is out a couple of feet, 3 feet, however long your arms is. If you're really long, 5 feet, I don't know if you're a giant. And somebody's pushing on there, they've got leverage over you. But when you have the substance in your hand or on your body that gives you strength, you'll test stronger. And with a pyramid right side up, you'll test stronger. But if you flip the pyramid upside down and have a muscle test you, you're going to test weaker in most cases. And that means that the pyramid is not putting something bad into your body. What the pyramid is doing is putting out a different polarity of the phohatic force. Phohatic force, a Tibetan word for the life force. And the yin and the yang is the upright pyramid. The phohatic force is polarizing the male energy. Pyramid's upside down, it's in the yin force, is polarizing the female energy. So, if you test weak, that means your yin forces are weak. And most women even test weak in their own energy, the female energy. So, therefore, if you were to take a pyramid and aim it at someone, just aim it at them, just point it at them from the base. If you held it up a little ways, say, pointed at them slightly down, they're going to get positive or male energy. And if you turn the pyramid upside down and aim it at them, it's going to go out as negative energy, which is not bad. Negative is a derogatory. I mean, it's yin. It's a yin energy, female energy. And it will affect that person at a distance. We make a device that's quite accentuated, you can see on the Pyridyne website, and it's called an irradiator, which Sumyasi brought to us in 1978 with this knowledge. But we're not talking about irradiators right now. We're talking about receptors. You'll see on the receptor that when it's worn in a vertical manner, as it's designed to be worn, that there will be pyramids on the bottom of the dish that will be pointing up, and there will be pyramids on the top of the dish pointing down. So if you micronize that and realize that these are little tiny pyramids and their field doesn't go too far, and look at the distance of where their field ends, it's about where the bridge is. So you've got a positive energy going up from the bottom and a negative energy coming from the bottom, and it's meeting at the bridge. And it's kind of in a trapezoidal waveform. If you were to look at it, it would be a circular trapezoidal wave. And this is called a scalar wave. And the scalar wave, the first node of it, or the first point where the negative and positive energies meet, is at the very tip of the bridge on the receptor, and that is where we put the stone. Then what happens is those two energies don't go out of the receptor, they reverse in, and as they come in, they go through that little hole in the center, and they go out as one line of perfect force and perfect synchronization of that color and that energy, that frequency, onto the aura of your body. One line of auric force only. So now it's like a radionic, or radionic in this case being a transmitted homeopathic effect. And this then is sent back up into the brain to rebalance the brain. So if the balance, the brain is now being rebalanced by this positive reference point of the proper color for the nuclear receptor, with this as a steadfast reference point, the body functions according to that color green, in this case because we're demonstrating it as an emerald, are all going to fall into place naturally. But realize that the cells have to be taking a period of time, several months, to fall into place. And as long as that pyramid, that receptor is being worn, it will all happen rather quickly, and your body will fall back into its natural state where it's supposed to be. And after it's fallen into its natural state at that frequency color, you now test and you move on to the next color. That link of the fence is fixed, or the chain is repaired. And now it's time to go to the next weakest link, which is slightly weaker than the one this one previously was, or was actually stronger. This was now the weakest link, now is one of the stronger ones, so the next one up the chain, is what I'm trying to say, is now going to be repaired until the whole chain is all made whole again. That's usually when you get to a diamond or a white frequency, which works in the crown chakra, and it's out of the body, works out of the body, above the head, above the third eye position. If you look at the back of the nuclear receptor, you'll see that there's a pattern on the back, and that's called a Yanin mantra. It's spelled Y-A-N-I-N mantra. And what that is what we call a microwave trap. And microwaves are occurring in the although ELF, extremely low frequency, occurs at frequencies just slightly above and below the 0 to 18 hertz, 18 cycles per second in the human body. Is sub-frequencies of that, like 2.8, 2.9 could be ELF, where 2.8 is good, 2.9 is bad, frequency cycles per second. There is a carrier frequency that ELF rides on, that's high frequency, and that's microwave. And so what happens is the Yanin mantra blocks all of the carrier frequencies of ELF. So we call it a microwave trap in the radars that I used to work on. By the way, there's a great picture of one of the radars. I think we mentioned that on the website. The radars had what we call ATR, anti-transmit modes, which would block out unwanted frequencies while the transmitter is sending millions of watts out. The receiver, which is sensitive to the returning signal of the transmitter, the transmitted signal, and that comes back in milliwatts and microwatts and nanowatts. So if it sends out, if it wants to receive something with a sensitivity of 1 millionth of what left, or 1 billionth of what left, you have to protect the receiver from blowing up when the transmitter is sending out the energy. This is called anti-transmit receive pulse. What the microwave trap does on the nuclear receptor, it prevents this very delicate single strand of DNA enhancing energy coming back from the bridge down through the hole to the aura from being interfered with. So the pattern is very, very important on the back of the receptor. If that pattern is not correct, it won't work. The signal will never get through, or it'll be damaged. So that was one of the things in the patent that was, that's very clear in my design patent on that, that had to be taken into account. I'm working on the design patents now for the projector. If you look at the projector, there's actually two sets of Yanin mantras on it, but they blend in a different way than they do on the receptor, because we're dealing with a hologram, which is a whole other area. But because there is a microwave, there is an electronic field in a hologram, we had to address it, and that's the way the back of the projectors do. They address that holographic field. So these are some of the things that Sannyasi taught about. So then you'll also notice on the receptor, the chain. Chains are usually from 30 inches down to sometimes as close as 26. The ideal chain length would be 33 and a third to 34 inches, which is, if you stretch it out, 1/4 wavelength of the human DNA, which is 375 to 425 megahertz. So the chain, we keep it up in the chain acts as an antenna for the receptor of electronic frequencies that are out there, like microwaves that are floating around, and it sorts them out so that it can use them as a source of fuel or energy also. Now, some people don't like, in Germany especially, we had problems with people not wanting to put a solid object around their necks, i.e. a chain. So they put a leather strap onto the top of the receptor, and then they would ask me, will that hurt the receptor? No, it won't hurt the receptor. It's just like taking your radio at home, and you've got a great big antenna on it, and you're in a fairly strong area where you receive signals, and you decide the antenna is an eyesore, so you whack off 2/3 of the antenna, hopefully 3/4 of it, so it's 1/4 wavelength. The radio still works. It's a little less sensitive than it was, but there's not this horrible aerial sticking out of it. It's like when they went to aerials on the back of shortwave radio on cars. They went to these great big long aerials to what they're called bottom-loading whips, wherein they substituted a little transformer and a little short wire to compensate for the missing great big long length of wire that was flopping all over. You probably remember that in the old days, those of you who've been around huge aerials on the back of cars back in the 60s and 70s. Now, tiny short little things, like if you look at a police car, it's just a little bitty aerial there. It used to be a great big one. Same thing with a receptor. You've just cut down its antenna frequency somewhat, but it's still going to function. You probably knocked off 10-12% of its effectivity, which is not enough. When you get into a solid gold one, you would never notice it anyway. You will notice it somewhat on the little inexpensive ones because they aren't near as powerful as the silver, gold, and platinum receptors. So these are the things that Semyonov did not tell us about. What she did tell us about was the basic design of the nuclear receptor. It's a Pleiadian device, 100%. I had worked with Pat Flanagan originally. He's pretty well known to some people out there. I'd consulted with him and worked with him on the early design of it because he had developed a device that worked on microwaves only that you wore around your neck. It was, some of you might remember, it's about 6 inches across. It was made on a printed circuit board, and it was a pretty impressive thing for the time. Today, of course, that technology is completely obsolete, but back in the 70s, it was pretty amazing because the receptor never even came along until 1981. But now, since how many years have gone by? 81, 91, 2001, 2005, what, 24 years have gone by of nuclear receptor production. There's a lot of them out there, and of all the ones we put out there, I'll bet you we haven't had a dozen come back from people all over the world saying they didn't notice something. 12 out of 24 years of production, 12 units, when you literally produce hundreds of thousands of these things, maybe millions by now, that's a pretty good track record for something. And I guarantee you the people that didn't feel them were so toxic they weren't walking dead anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered if they did. They were too far gone. So the kinds of things that we have to look at with a nuclear receptor. Anyway, continuing on here, Semyonov gave us the basics of the nuclear receptor, but then we had to kind of figure out from you what they did, actually putting them out in the field. So where the receptor project is now, the University of California in Irvine is interested in doing endocrinology tests on it, and the FDA is sort of interested in looking at the results of these tests. So hopefully sometime next year, because it won't happen this year, that's for sure, I'll get with my buddy Jerry over there, and we'll start these tests, and we'll go on and see what they actually do. When you work with endocrinology, you're looking at the production of hormones and the amount of distribution in the blood, and you're working at billions of parts. Hormones are not like flowing through the body like sand into a pond. They're very, very subtle. There's only a few of them, and it's very hard to detect what the amount is in the first place versus what was there before you stimulate it. So this is very difficult, very sensitive testing. And take some time to get really good qualitative results. What we want is qualitative results, not quantitative. One thing about Pyridine, we take our time in our studies and we do them right. We do them with integrity. And then that way they're never refuted ever. But we've had, I remember one time we were up at a health show up in New York City in Manhattan in the old days. And I had a skeptic come up and he says, "How can that thing, that little thing there in your display case, affect my body? I don't believe that'll work that." And I says, "I'll tell you what. I'm going to let you wear one of these things. I'm going to give you one to wear. I trust you'll bring it back." In New York, they're pretty honest. And I says, if you get a result from it, you got to buy it. I says, if you don't get a result from it, just bring it back, and I'll give you something else around here that you think you can use, just for trying it. And he says, okay, I'll do that. I don't have a problem with that. So he went off. It's gone about 20 minutes. And I gave him a diamond. I kind of cheated. That's pretty intense. I gave him a diamond. Actually, it's cubic zirconian in the lower cost, but it's a natural stone, and it's white. We use those. We use topaz. White topaz is the word, too. Sent that out. He comes back about 20 minutes later. He's bright red, beet red, all over. And I figured, well, the boy must have taken a bunch of niacin. I mean, when you take niacin, you get a B3. It's B3 is nicotinic acid, and looks like tobacco, actually, to the body almost. It's a stimulant. And if you've got a lot of toxins in your body, antigens in your body, it's going to release them pretty quick all at once, and that's going to cause a histamine reaction because all these poisons going through the arteries of the system that were dislodged in fat, creating this bright red flash, irritate the veins in the body, so the body protects itself with histamine. Of course, histamine causes a flash. There's too much of it. And so I thought he took some niacin. He hadn't. He says, this receptor did this to me. He says, take it back, take it back. He says, this thing is dangerous. Now it's something that doesn't do anything, just something that's dangerous. And I says, no, it's not dangerous. It's just that it's very strong. It works on some people very quickly that really need it. I says, why don't we muscle test you for the right one and let you try that for a half an hour? Well, now he had his attention, so I tested him. I forget what he was, a big, tall, thin guy. He was about 6'2". I remember he had blonde hair, blue eyes, and a very light skin. So, very one of his light-complected, almost albino skin. And I remember him lit up like a beet. And albinos are very sensitive to my receptors, incredibly insensitive, usually, especially the women. So he comes back later now. I give him the emerald. I think we gave him the emerald. I think even though he was thin, he had a thyroid problem. And I knew he had a liver problem because the diamond set him up. But we didn't start detoxing the liver right away. That's way too much. What we have to do is get the body ready to handle the detoxification. So therefore, before you start, somebody comes in and the liver, the detoxer for the liver would be a brown stone, a darker stone, like a citron, for example, brown citron or a dark orange stone. But you wouldn't put that on a person right away because you'd poison them in their own poisons. It's like when you take people off Valium, you have to back them down off of it and get them on water and a regimen and bland foods and the whole nine yards before you end up putting them in the hospital and you kill them. So I think we need an emerald. We put an emerald on him because he needed to get energy from his head. He was very smart, into his body. And his body was really suffering from malnutrition. That's why he was so thin. I'm sure in the future he would gain weight, even though it's nice to be thin. Sometimes it's not healthy for some people. In this case, this person was definitely not going to be healthy with the way he was. So we put the emerald on him, and he wore that for a couple of hours, and he came back towards the end of the show. And he said that he... wearing the emerald, now that he knew something was going to happen, he was not anticipating anything, but he knew something would happen. He says he felt a calmness. He felt really good, really clear. He said he had some anxiety problems, and those seemed to go away. And he thought that this was not what he needed. He wanted it, so he bought it. And the next day was the second day. It was a two-day show in New York. It was a Saturday and a Sunday. I think we were in the New Yorker Hotel doing either a New Life Expo or a Whole Life Expo in those days. I forget which one it was, but it was one of them. And I think that was the New Life Expo. Yeah, that's who it was. So anyway, he comes back the next day and he says, I had this thing. I said, are you sleep with it? I says, yeah, but I says, you don't need to wear it in sleep. Just put it under your pillow. That's the best thing to do. That's what most people do. So he had slept with it. And he said he, for the first time in years, he didn't have nightmares. He was really sleeping good. He says, could this have something? I says, yeah. He says, if your body energy is your balance, his nightmares come from blockage on the astral body. And the reason you're having a nightmare is the astral body is blocked up, and it's an indication to wake up and fix the problem is what it is. The nightmare is supposed to disturb your sleep and get you back awake so you can fix it. Well, a lot of people sleep through the nightmares because they're so exhausted, and that's part of the reason they're suffering from exhaustion, too. So I says, you go ahead and put that under your pillow in the future, and maybe you want to try one of our pyramids, tent pyramids over your bed. But right now, I would work with that. And he says, well, how long will this thing last? I says, well, it'll last till it's done its job, and then you'll need something else. He says, what do you mean? I says, well, you'll need to have one of the other colors once you get your thyroid working. Your energy will go up some. He says, yeah. He says, that's another thing. Oh, my energy came way up. I says, yeah, it'll come way beyond that. Remember what you were like when you're 5 or 6 years old? Your kids are bouncing off the walls. I said, you'll be like that, but you got to get there. You got to get your stabilize your motility of your entire endocrine system, your cellular structure, your skin, your organs, all of it has to be fixed. So he says, well, what do I do? I says, well, I says, you're going to need other receptors. He says, well, can I buy all of them? He says, yeah, you can buy one of each, but don't wear them all now. It's going to be months between them. He says, no, I want to share them with my friends. Because that by now, we obviously had taught him muscle testing. So he ended up becoming a distributor. And here's a guy the day before, Lily was poo-pooing the thing, but he did have the courage to try it, got a horrible negative result, got a good result, duked it out with himself and us, and became a great distributor. So I was really impressed. These things are amazing, and I want to say right here now that receptors don't heal you. You have to heal yourself. All they do is get rid of blockages that your body has encountered due to the outside environmental toxicity and the outside environmental stress. Beyond that, your body has to do the rest. And as a result, nuclear receptor is a very, very popular item, and it has been for years. We make them in different metals. The other things that they do is we found that they remove radiation from the body. The body has a tendency to store radiation in the prostate gland and the mammary gland on females. And the storage of radiation, coupled with a bad pH factor in your body over a period of time, has a person leads a tendency towards being susceptible to carcinogenic poisons that are in the air and the food and whatever. So in other words, it could lead to cancer. But what happens is when you wear the receptor, it removes this radiation. And of course, because the pyramid itself will balance pH, because life force balances itself, will balance the pH, it has a tendency to lead us away from any susceptibility to cancer. That leads us rather quickly, actually. The normal ones that Semyasi, she had us make them in three octaves, the ones for the working class, which is the people that can't afford the exotic ones. So those, they're under the $200 range mark, are made out of a cadmium zinc process. And zinc, the reason we use zinc is one time when I was working over in a company called Zenith Advanced Health Systems up in Corvallis, Oregon. I helped start that in 1981, along with some of my, I still had Paradigm was strong then, but I used to help other MLMs start. They carried our products for a number of years, and Harold Keith, it was a big zinc fan, and he thought nobody had enough zinc, which he was basically right. So what we did is we all wore a big nugget of zinc. He had one that he'd worn for years, and what we did is we weighed it down to thousandths of a gram with a very sensitive scale, and each person would wear it for a week or two, and we'd see how lighter it got, because it would always get lighter. When you need zinc, it will migrate from the nugget that you're wearing around your neck onto your body, and it just dissolves it. And so we made tests with zinc. So I knew zinc was a good element to work with. And cadmium, of course, is well known in the science world, the normal science world, to absorb radiation. So we decided to make the base metal zinc cadmium for the base receptors, which is you get a lot of bang for your buck, because now you're getting detox from radiation as well as all the energy things and the precursoring things that we've discussed earlier. So that was really neat. And later on, we decided to increase the strength of them. And I wore one of these zinc cadmium ones for years, probably 7 or 8 years, before we decided now we better increase the energy a little bit. So we decided to go to silver. So we went to a sterling silver. It does, because it's an active device, sterling silver normally doesn't tarnish much, but on the body it will tarnish a lot because of the activity that it's prone to receive. So therefore you do have to clean them quite a bit. And by the way, on the nickel cadmium, the zinc cadmium receptors, a lot of them, they're plated with a 24 karat gold plate, not an 18, but 24 karat gold plate. This enhances the device because the 24 karat gold is a perfect octahedron. So it enhances the device. But a lot of times people would say, you got bad plating. I look at the receptor and the back of the plating is down to the bare metal. We're looking at zinc cadmium on the back and gold on the front. Well, that's because their body is so starving for zinc, it dissolves the gold, dissolves their other plating materials, and goes right for the zinc. So if you happen to be one of those people out there, this is happening to us, not because your body is acidic, it probably is, but I mean, it's not what's causing the receptor to do that. It's called migration, and what happens is your body is eating or dissolving it. It's eating the receptor is what it's doing. It's actually eating it. I remember the skin is the largest organ in the body, so it's going to be the hungriest. And the skin will absorb. I mean, that's what it does. And it will absorb anything, and it absorbs the receptors just fine. So if you happen to be one of these people, you need to get on our trace minerals and get some more minerals in your body, because you're vastly deficient. And that's not good. So we went to silver. What we noticed with silver, when people would wear those, after 2 or 3 days, they'd become unpleasant. The feeling would become unpleasant in some individuals, not everybody. Some people it took a week and some a month. But eventually everybody got to a point where they didn't really want to wear it. Something was going on with it. And we found out it was becoming radioactive. The silver would absorb even more radiation out of the body than the zinc cadmium. It was a real radiation magnet. And anybody will tell you, when something is radioactive, the first thing you do to get rid of it is wash it in water. So what we did is we recommend that people would wash the receptors in water. And that's what they do. They wash them in water, and then, therefore, the radiation is removed. And then, of course, that weirdness that you got when you wore it went away. And some people wash them like me. I wear a gold one. I wear it every day. I still wash it every single day. I wash it. And so what happens is, once in a while, it gets built up. You can send it to us, and we'll clean it for you. Or you can buy some silver polish and clean it, or you can put it in a dishwasher, and that'll clean it too. But sometimes some dishwashers make it a little dark, so you got to clean it with a solution afterwards, like a... You can buy them in the stores, a silver cleaning solution. If it's dark, it doesn't affect the workings of it. It only affects the looks of it. It's not cosmetically as pretty as it normally is. But there's nothing you can do about it. We've tried putting coatings over them. They just go away. I mean, the receptor is too powerful with the energy to accept a coating. The other thing that we do is we make them out of gold. We make them out of 18-karat gold, not 24, because 24 is too soft, and 18-karat does get dinged up, and we don't use something less than that because it's not the right molecular structure. What we found is that when you make them out of 18-karat gold, the energy is much, much higher in the nuclear receptor than anywhere else. It has a tremendous healing effect on the body. The body heals itself much faster. People with injuries and that seem to notice a rapid cellular readapting period. So gold makes them heal a lot faster, and it's more powerful than silver. It is definitely a little bit more powerful than silver, and it's miles beyond now the regular receptors. It's way beyond them. And then the next material we make them out is pure platinum. And clients like Wesley Snipes and these high-energy martial artists like he is and others love this kind of stuff. I've got a lot of boxers that wear them, and world-class athletes wear them, runners wear them. They've been up Mount Everest 3 times to the very top. These platinum ones get around, but I got to warn you, it's not about the expense of them, which is intense. They're astronomically expensive, because platinum is. They're very, very intense, and it's almost overkill for anybody to buy one of those. You have to be in top energy, top physical shape to wear one of these things, because it will hurt you. These things will bring you to pain. They will stimulate the endorphins too much. They'll overstimulate norepinephrine in the body, as best we can tell, and they will bring you to pain. So, I would not recommend platinum unless you are in really good shape and you can handle extreme energy. So what we do is we compromise out some of the ones. For example, what we'll do with a silver one, if somebody can't afford a silver one, but they want some of the benefits of a silver one, we'll make them a nice silver one, which is fairly inexpensive. We'll put a gold bridge on there. A gold bridge is called a duotone on a silver receptor. It has the healing power. It doesn't cost that much more. And it gives them a very great trade-off between a super expensive gold one and a moderately expensive silver one. And we do the same thing with the gold ones. We put a platinum bridge on them, on the gold ones, and that increases the energy towards platinum, but not too much. The price doesn't go up that much. And then if they really want to really kick it up a little bit more, we'll put diamonds on the bridge. And when we have a stage one, a stage two bridge that we make out of platinum that goes on the gold receptor. And what happens is, when you put these 28 little diamonds on the bridge, it accelerates the energy to the central stone. So it enhances the filter. It makes the filter a lot hotter. So it makes a clarity effect on the receptor. If you look at our website at Pyridyne, you'll see that what I'm talking about, why the different designs and what they do to the body. So these are the different metals we use in the receptors. Now, the platinum ones and the gold ones, by the way, I recommend you clean those things daily because they attract so much radiation. Those guys would probably glow in the dark if you didn't wash them in fairly rapidly and fairly quickly. That's how they attract a huge amount of radiation, and it's not bad. It's just it's what they do, and you've got to clean those things, or they will feel very, very unpleasant when you wear them over a period of time. So I didn't really mean to get off today on nuclear receptors, but it's, you know, I never know where I'm going to go with this. This is still the introduction, and we'll talk more about them later in the radio shows. But right now, I just want to focus on the fact that they're there. The book, The Promise, talks about them. They come with a nice booklet. I think it's a 40 or 50-page booklet that comes at no charge with them and explains them. You can stick them in water and purify your water, and you can put them under your plate before you eat food in a restaurant, and it'll change the pH of your food and make it taste better. You can put a bottle of wine on top of one of them. It'll age it a bunch. There's so much you can do with them. It's never ending. Or you can go in and somebody has a Coca-Cola drink, and you can flatten them, take the fizz out of it, too. I mean, dip it in their Coke, or you're going to have to wash it. And not a flat Coke. It's like when you leave the lid off of one of those things for a day or two. Now, I don't drink that stuff, but some people do, and it's fun to drink once in a while. It tastes good, but it's very bad for you, and I don't like the feeling afterwards. It's fun while it goes down, end of story, you know. So there's a lot of mischievous things you can do with these things, and it's a nice jewelry piece. It's really interesting because one of my friends who owns a couple of platinum receptors with large diamonds in them took them to a jeweler in Hawaii. And for an appraisal, just for the fun of it, like he walked in on him, and he's a doctor friend of mine, and he, Dr. Ted, and he walked in there, and just for the hell of it, he decided to see what, he took it off his neck, and what's this thing worth? Well, it was really strange, because I guess the receptors are so popular, we've sold them to countesses and people of class in Europe and all of that sort of thing, and I guess they have a value now, an appreciative value that the world jewelry people recognize now what they are. And they have given them some kind of a classification, and they actually become an investment in an estate when they're gold and platinum. They have an appreciating value, which I never thought I'd make it in as a jewelry designer in the design world, but I guess I did accidentally anyway by producing so many of them in such precious metals, because they are well known all over the world by the jewelers, and it's pretty interesting. Well, I hope you're enjoying the show. We're coming to the end of it now. Receptors was a good topic, I guess, for today, but really it's still about the introduction, and I do want to get to some of the contacts that I had with Sannyasi, and some of you have sent me some emails along this way, and I'll try to get to the answers to them in preceding shows, and continue on sending me your questions. The Rays of Truth book is good. I highly recommend it. It's got a lot of very highly technical things in it, and it's got a lot of simple stuff, so there's something in there for everybody. And if you got any other questions, you can call Paradigm at 1-800-729-2603. Mitch there can answer a lot of your questions. And you can also go to our website, www.paradigm.com. And as we are coming to the close of another hour, be sure and send in the questions. Give us a call. I haven't got that many phone calls on this show yet. I'm sure we will. But we're there. We're looking forward to hearing from you. And I got some really cool people working for me. Or working actually with me. I don't really think people work for me. I don't like that expression because I remember when I had jobs. I think they'd work with me. We all work as a team over here. Because what we want to do is make you healthier, allow you to get yourself healthier, and make this world a better place by you making it a better place because you're better. And I think that's very important. And I got to go back today and get ready to do another show and start working on my book. So I got plenty to do, and I hope you have a good week out there. I know this will be a Tuesday when you listen to this, so that's the beginning of the week. And with that, may God go with you and stay in the grace. Be part of the human race and beyond. Thank you.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.